Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Anatomy of Movie. Today we dissect War Dogs in a very different fashion if you're a fan of Anatomy of Movie, so stay tuned for this experiment.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, War Dogs!
War Dogs.
We're doing a little something different today on Anatomy of a Movie. So indeed. If this is your first time joining us, this is not the regular structure.
It's all right.
If you're a fan of Anatomy of a Movie, well, let us know what you guys think of the format. We're not completely changing around the format to this, but it's almost out of necessity because I was the only one who saw War Dogs.
Shame on me and shame on the rest of the Popcorn Talk staff, I'll say that.
That's right. And while I've done reviews in the past solo, you know, it's not really fun, and it's very difficult on me. And so I figured today what we'd rather do is Jeffrey Crane Graham. He's gonna sort of ask me questions, almost like an interview style, and I'm going to answer them. And we'll talk about all the various aspects of the movie that we normally talk about on Anatomy of a Movie, but it'll be at least conversational.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm a big NPR fan, so anyone out there who listens to Fresh Air with my girl Terry Gross, I'm kind of thinking that's sort of the aspirational version of what we're going for here.
You put me to sleep already.
Yeah. Forgive me for those who aren't a fan of NPR, and she also does tons and tons of research, but Phil's my buddy, and I'm really excited to learn about this movie, so should
that's
be good.
Right. Let me give you guys a couple of quick thoughts. Number one, this was, believe it or not, for me, a very highly anticipated movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love Todd Phillips. I love the Hangover movies. And I'm a Miles Teller fan. And I'm a Jonah Hill fan, to be honest, too. You know, between not all of his movies do it for me, but the movies such as, like, the Jump Street series and whatnot, I think are fantastic. Superbad, still one of the greatest comedies ever. And I thought, you know, Miles Teller, I think, is a fantastic actor and is coming really into his own. So I was looking forward to that. And I liked the premise. I thought it was gritty and there was something to be told there.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot of Todd Phillips tropes. You know, it sort of begins where the movie ends and then you kind of rewind.
Kind of manic, like his other movies. Do you feel like very aggressive and intense and fast-paced and a little over the top?
Yeah, you know, you definitely. And the main characters are not necessarily something to be aspired to as well. And overall, I did enjoy it. The thing that bummed me out was it was told mainly through voiceover, which I thought was highly unnecessary. There was chapter marks, much like a Tarantino movie, and I thought that was effective enough. I didn't need the voiceover.
Yeah, I mean, we both work in entertainment, and I think a lot of writers, directors, editors, anyone would say that voiceover is becoming a bit tired, and I think it's kind of a trope that's looked at, sort of, it's looked down on because it can seem like a artificial way to rely on telling a story when you could do it. I mean, Phil's an editor, so great editing could tell the story through visuals or, you know, understated subtle dialogue. So sometimes voiceover can feel a little hackneyed, I think.
You know, this was taught to me. The difference between if you want to keep voiceover versus not, ask yourself if the story needs the voiceover, then you shouldn't use it.
Hmm.
Because if the voiceover there is there, but it really doesn't need it, then you're supplementing. It's almost like a contradiction. It's just juxtaposition. Which, you know, I mean, look at Shawshank Redemption. Believe it or not, that movie could stand alone without the voiceover.
Yeah.
But the voiceover adds something.
Compliments.
Whereas this, you know, the unfortunate part about War Dogs, you know, it would, some of it would crumble if it didn't have the voiceover, hence why it was used.
So, yeah, the voiceover should be the icing on the cake versus the foundation of the crutch. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. That's something I'll consider as I can keep writing.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
But you liked it overall, it sounds like.
Overall, yes. Overall, okay. I'm in the camp that enjoyed it, you know. And I thought, if nothing else, the ending was very hard-hitting. And I thought, again, the subject matter, you know, was as such. And yeah, it just kind of brought you home right at the end.
Do you feel like this was one of those, like, fast-paced comedic movies that ends up being like a social commentary kind of thing? I'm thinking of The Big Short is what I'm thinking of right now.
It's not quite like The Big Short in terms of the commentary, but there is something there. Mm-hmm. And you get this from the trailer, too, where Jonah Hill says, you know, this isn't about being pro-war. It's about being pro-money, dude.
Oh.
And it is interesting. And it does open your eyes into this world of, you know, you discover that Efren, who Jonah Hill plays a guy named Efren, that really, you know, these guys are bottom feeders. And the whole point of it was that they needed to, in order to get ammunition to the Iraq war and Afghanistan, whatever, they opened up somewhat questionable means of trade.
Yeah.
So that the American public could literally do this. And the whole point was that there's certain government, there was companies that weren't going to take certain deals because it just wasn't
advantageous.
Yeah, it wasn't lucrative enough for them, right?
Yeah.
So then, you know, guys like you and I could legitimately take, you know, and we could make, you know, 100K on these smaller deals because no one else wanted to take them.
Interesting. So it's kind of like the mom and pop version of
gun
arms
selling.
Dealing.
Yeah.
Huh. That makes sense.
And it is interesting, you know, the interesting moments of this are them going and, you know, how they set these things up. And how there's certain regulations, even though obviously it's like war and things like that, because they buy Italian guns, but those Italian guns can't be brought into, you know, they can't be brought into Afghanistan directly. So then they have to now smuggle the guns into a neighboring country, and then from the neighboring country into.
So there's like an element of like red tape. But, like, you're sort of asking the question of, like, why is there red tape surrounding war kind of thing?
You know, yeah. You know, definitely.
Huh.
You know, and that, in a way, what's nice is that the Miles Teller character, David, you know, I don't know if, you know, the real life David isn't fully like this, I don't think, but what I appreciate is he's sort of the guy that still is somewhat redeemable.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end, even though he's done various deplorable things, I think he's sort of understood the lesson. Whereas Jonah Hill's character, Efren, you know, he never has – while he goes to jail and things like that, he never fully – I don't think he's ever going to change.
Hmm.
In the movie context. I don't know about in real life, but in the movie context, no.
That's always an interesting juxtaposition, though. Like, it sounds like these two probably carried the movie. I mean, this really was their movie at the end of the day, from what I can tell. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes if both of your protagonists learn a lesson, it can be a little boring. I think there's an element probably of complexity and interesting writing. If maybe Miles Teller, his arc was a little redeemable and he learned his lesson, but Jonah Hill's character doesn't. I think of Jordan Belfort and Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
Do you feel like there was Wolf of Wall Street tones in this movie? I got that from the marketing, at least.
A little bit. I mean, Wolf of Wall Street, you know, and speaking, that was a movie that used narration in an interesting way because, obviously, we couldn't trust the narrator.
Yeah.
Remember, there was that great example where Jordan Belfort's like, it was a black car. No, wait, sorry, it was red. It was a red car.
That was really interesting. I had never seen so, like, concretely the idea of an unreliable narrator in film. Like, I feel like I've seen that in novels before, but I loved that component. I know we're talking about War Dogs, but I think, like, that's an example of probably the right way to use voiceover, right? Because it's not necessarily just telling the story. It's revealing character in that situation, so...
Exactly. And so with this, I mean, yeah, there's an element of that. What I appreciate, the complexity of it was, you know, these guys were best friends since forever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Efren comes back into David's life. And even though they're best friends, like, it takes David a long time to really know that he's, at the end of the day, being used by Efren.
Hmm.
You know, because he sees Efren play these characters to everybody else. And what he realizes by the end is that for all his life, Efren has played the role of a best friend to David when he really wasn't. And that was an interesting take on it.
Yeah.
Cool. So I really enjoyed that. And you know, Efren, the real Efren, I wanted to look into this. He's not like what Jonah Hill portrays him, at least physically. And I thought Jonah Hill actually had a lot of fun with it because he's got this really almost like a rat-like laugh.
The real life Ephraim.
No.
Oh, Jonah Hill's character.
You know, and you know, he's so disgustingly fat. He's like a Cuban drug lord to me.
Interesting.
And I enjoyed that aspect of it, which I know, some people who did see the movie who didn't want to appear on Anatomy who just didn't like Jonah Hill's character. But I said, like, there was a purpose to that.
Right.
I'm glad you didn't like. You weren't supposed to like him.
From what I've seen in the movie, it does look like this is a heavier version of Jonah Hill. It's interesting. One thing that I think is kind of bullshit is that Jonah Hill is an example of an actor whose weight fluctuates a lot, but it doesn't really seem like the media talks about it. Whereas, like, Melissa McCarthy is the same thing, where she'll change her weight for roles or whatever, and people are obsessive over her weight, which I guess unrelated seems to maybe reveal some of the double standards in the industry. But am I right in saying that this was a heavier version of Jonah Hill than we're used to?
I think back to 22 Jump Street is the one that comes to mind most recently.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's a pretty slim dude in that movie.
Right.
He is fat as F.
Do you think he did that to...
I think it's definitely intentional.
Yeah.
Oh, it was intentional. And, you know, he never met the real Ephraim, which is kind of interesting. But his quote is, I'm used to it. If a person is aggressively against me playing them, it's probably a good sign.
Well, I'm trying to think of who else he's portrayed. I guess in Moneyball, his character wasn't really deplorable, but...
interestingly enough, he's also in Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of, was Wolf of Wall Street, but I don't know if he's playing anyone. But I guess from a character standpoint, as an actor, if you know you have a juicy role, if the person you're portraying is afraid to see it realized on the big screen.
Yeah.
So do you feel like the performances were pretty strong in this movie? I don't know if I'm jumping ahead too much.
I thought they were, I mean, they did definitely carry a lot of the movie on their shoulders. And most specifically, even Miles Teller.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, again, when he wasn't narrating, that he did a really good job with it. And I thought the dynamic with his wife was actually really strong as well.
Huh. I really like Miles Teller, too. I think if I'm thinking about some of my favorite movies in the last 2 years, Whiplash definitely comes to mind. But even, like, his smaller movies, like, I don't know if you ever saw The Spectacular Now.
I did see that, where he's basically the alcoholic.
The alcoholic. But his performance was so good. And that's also, like, an early Shailene Woodley, too. But I feel like this isn't necessarily my kind of movie. Like, I didn't love Wolf of Wall Street like other people did. But I'm also surprised I haven't seen it, because I really like both Jonah Hill and Miles Teller, and this seems like their movie, so I'm sure I will.
I mean, I appreciate what I liked was, I think there's a bit of an element of satire, but it's very low-key. It's almost like British humor, where it's not really over the top.
Yeah.
And again, you just kind of, you know, in some ways, you start to understand of why people would get caught up in this world. You know, I mean, you know, at the height of all of this, these guys were 25 years old.
Wow.
They're your age.
Yeah.
You know, and when you're basically on any given deal can make, you know, 300K, that's big, right? And, you know, the way the trailer advertises it is that it's the big job, right? It's the $300 million job. That's really kind of what they build towards and what really screws them over. But throughout the whole movie, for the most part, it's more about these smaller jobs.
So I didn't realize they were so young. Do you feel like, two questions about their age. Do you feel like, one, you could buy Jonah Hill and Miles Teller as playing 25? And two, do you feel like their age was a major focus? Because when I hear that age, I think like, wow, that's very interesting. Do you feel like they played that up in the movie, that these are kids really, or not so much?
I think they did, you know, and I think... Again, I know they're a little bit older than 25, but at this point, you know, I've seen the way it's gone, like 40-year-olds still could look like they're in high school.
Yeah.
Like it's just gone to that level. So for these guys, I bought them, and especially because they play a great immaturity level in the movie. You know, I mean, they're much like the real guys, like, you know, they're in over their heads. They're able to do this, but they're getting high most of the time.
Interesting.
You know,
that's Todd. It's kind of like Todd Phillips meets a more serious. We'll get to it, but it sounds like he was probably the right pick for a director in this case.
I think so. You know, he was, and again, you know, like I said, it had his various tropes. You know, starting off where we're kind of going to end.
Yeah.
In a way. So that way it's like, okay, well, how do we build to that moment? I don't know if it was the right choice for this movie necessarily to do that sort of storytelling.
Interesting.
Because unlike Hangover or Due Day, you're starting off, you're spanning months, if not years.
Right.
So whereas with Hangover, you're spanning basically a day and a half, 2 days tops.
So you don't necessarily feel like opening with the ending serviced the story?
Yeah, I don't think it added anything more to it. But I did think, something that different that he did, like I said, he used almost Tarantino-esque chapter cards. And I thought that was an interesting way. And unlike Tarantino, they weren't just like chapter one and then the title. It was quotes of kind of what was going on. So it set the tone for what you were about to watch.
Interesting.
And I forget the exactly what, but like shit's about to hit the fan.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
Or like, again, paraphrasing, that doesn't sound legal at all.
So there was an element of like irreverence kind of to the movie. So this is another interesting question. I know that a lot of this movie takes place in the Middle East, obviously.
Not all of it.
Some of it. I feel like when I think Todd Phillips, I don't necessarily think like culturally sensitive, like geographically nuanced kind of director. Do you feel like he handled like the ethno, like centric conflicts sensitively, or did he need to? Like, how was that presented?
Good question, Jeff.
Thank you.
Here's the thing. I think he handled it in the way the characters would have handled it. Because here's the thing. You have Jonah, you have Ephraim going through customs, right, being like, hey, I'm American, sorry, I need to go first, it's okay, don't worry about me.
That's fair, yeah.
And like, is he being sensitive? No. But because Ephraim is not being sensitive whatsoever. Now, interesting, okay, you would think that it actually takes place in the Middle East a lot. Believe it or not, it doesn't. Because the $300 million deal, at the end of it, Bradley Cooper's character kind of comes in there because he's the best of the best in this world, right? He is the war dog.
I forgot he's in this movie too.
But he's their kind of guy, and basically they need to put together the $300 million deal is the deal of all deals. It's what they're calling the Afghan deal. So I have to put together all this stuff, and it's a lot. And typically you would have to piece together multiple suppliers in order to fulfill that type of order.
I see.
He's able to fulfill it through one dealer, and that's so basically he's kind of like a middleman. And what's interesting, like they get it all from Albania of all places,
huh?
And it's interesting kind of learning because again, you kind of think about it in this way, like most of the real interesting part, most of these bullets and this ammunition and these guns, they're like hundreds of years old, some of them, right?
Interesting.
And they get passed from one war to the other, and it's like, okay, well, let's say you and I were at war. We no longer are at war, but we have so much leftover crap, and Zach, who's in the booth today, maybe he's at war with our co-host Marissa. Well, then, I don't need my guns, so let me sell my guns to him. But each of us individually represents a country. And I thought that was very fascinating, especially with the Middle East. Like, it's such a weird and odd history between the Cold War and it makes you think, like, as much as, like, I don't know, for lack of insensitivity, like, as fucked up as we think that part of the world is, mm-hmm. like, we fucked it up.
I know. And we're financing the problem. Like, we're fueling the flames as well. It's interesting. One thing I've noticed, this isn't a question so much as more of an observation, but I feel like recently, like, the cinematic approaches to war have been very kind of unconventional, because I think of Zach, who's producing our show actually right now. We covered Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, which was that Tina Fey movie that came out this year.
Check that on Anatomy Movie.
Check it on Anatomy Movie if you like this kind of genre. But that was also sort of an unconventional, irreverent approach to war. And then there's this year too, and I feel like we haven't had like the standard like Saving Private Ryan, or I guess there was the Hurt Locker, which was 5 or 6 years ago,
a bit ago.
So it's interesting to see how Hollywood is handling war, because I feel like I've recently the conflicts and ideologies that are driving war are so fucked up, as you say, that there's no way to approach it straight. You can only take a satirical approach. I don't know.
And there's no one like. With World War One, there's a clear, distinct ending. With World War Two, there's a clear, distinct ending.
Yeah.
And for better or worse, like, yeah, we won.
Yeah.
And so, you can kind of tout that and be happy about it and make a good movie. Whereas this, like, we're not, the war's not over. No one's really won or lost. And so, like, yeah, there's you know, how do you end a movie, a war movie, without an ending?
We're in it. I guess in the same way, if we're talking classic movies, Dr. Strangelove kind of did the same thing, as they were amidst the Cold War. It's interesting to think maybe that's how Hollywood handles during war. We have to take kind of a satirical approach. I don't know.
Maybe. Well, there's also that year there was Doctor Strangelove in 64, and there's also Failsafe, which was actually much more. It did the same thing as Doctor Strangelove, but it was a very serious take on it.
Never seen it. I'll have to. Would you recommend Failsafe to me and audiences?
Yeah, because like Doctor Strangelove, the whole point is they went beyond the border,
right,
beyond the Failsafe border, and to trigger all the nuclear bombs.
Yeah.
Failsafe is same thing, except a serious version of it.
Oh, that sounds good.
In terms of, and it's the little things. What I appreciate about this, right? This is, and because it's an enemy, and even though you haven't seen the movie, I'm going to spoil, stuff. It was the little things that broke it down, right? They had ammunition from Chinese. Even though it was because the Albanians bought Chinese bullets.
Hmm.
And that's how they acquired all these bullets. Well, the U.S. government can't technically take Chinese bullets.
Wow. Because
so they repackaged the shit out of them.
Oh.
But the problem is, this is where, unfortunately, Ephraim got a little greedy. He didn't want to pay not only Bradley Cooper's character. He also didn't want, out of that, he stopped payment to the Albanian shipping plant. And because of that, the Albanian shipping plant was the one who called.
Oh, so the
U.S. government and tipped them off.
Interesting. That was the broken link in the chain.
Which, by the way, they were set to make three. And this is how, again, you start to examine the greed of things. They actually got an amazing deal. So initially, these things were in heavy crates and things like that. And I forget how much it would have cost. Maybe like $3 to $4 million to ship it. By repackaging them, they actually ended up saving like $7 million. And so the cost at which the Albanians wanted to repatch the entire thing was $100,000.
Interesting.
You couldn't pay out of a 300. You were already saving so much money they couldn't pay. So it kind of speaks to greed. Now, speaking of getting a great deal, one of our great sponsors is Blue Apron. And talk about a great deal.
Oh,
Blue
yeah.
Blue Apron. Okay. If you're unfamiliar, it is a subscription model for food. You get food delivered right to your house, which, by the way, okay, so a couple of things with that. Number one, you don't have to go grocery shopping. I hate grocery shopping. And you know what? Even if I did like grocery shopping, okay, let me buy all the ingredients. Oops, number one, I forgot an ingredient that I need in order to make the thing that I need to make or I want to make. Two, if I only need a small portion of the ingredient, but it comes in a stupid large box,
exactly.
Now guess what? Now I'm stuck with this and I'm just wasting money.
Exactly. And I actually am a Blue Apron customer. My girlfriend and I use it all the time. The thing I really, really like about Blue Apron is just what you said. You get to use these exotic ingredients that you would never want to buy just for a single meal, but they come in a perfectly portioned amount. So, like, I can use, like, taro sauce or something delicious from, like, Albania or something. I don't know. It's just,
technically, it doesn't come from Albania because it's all grown locally here in the U.S.
Oh, see, I'm wrong. But what's so cool is I can use these exotic ingredients and, like, feel like I'm this, like, cultural foodie, and it comes right to me. I don't have to do any work. It's awesome.
I know. And, the nice part, it's meals, customized meals delivered right to your house. You get your preference, right? So when you sign up, you get to say, okay, are you this? Are you that? What do you prefer? So your dietary needs are met.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the fantastic part. And I hate the notion of thinking every single day of like, oh, what do I want to eat? This is like a nice little surprise of, oh, and these are ready, And again, it's within your dietary means. So for less than $10 per meal, you get delivered all these amazing recipes with all the ingredients that you would actually need. As I said, it's local farms, it's fresh food, I know it's kind of overstated in many ways, like, oh, you should look. Like, no, you should eat local.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an easy way to do it. It's not like you have to, again, it's making it simple. And the variety is fantastic, whether it's Japanese ramen noodles, wild-caught Alaskan salmon, heirloom tomatoes. It's just amazing. You have variety, it's flexible, and it's easy.
So easy.
Not only do you get the ingredients, you get like one page, mm-hmm. right, with pictures their that photos. Explains how you do it. And it takes less than 40 minutes. It's really quick.
You heard it here first. I like legitimately struggle making Pop-Tarts, and I can make Blue Apron food. Like, there are photos, and like, it's like, it'll tell you exactly how much to put in and when. There's like explicit. It's like so easy, and I'm an idiot. So I would highly recommend, even if you don't think you're a good cook, you are with Blue Apron.
Well, how about this? If you're a little on the fence, you're like, oh, I don't know. Well, guess what? Get your first three meals for free if you go to blueapron.com/anatomy. And guess what? Not only is it the meals are free, but the shipping is free as well.
Wow.
So try it out. I promise you will like it. You will get addicted, but have yourself a good experience. Get your first three meals on us by going Blue Apron. That's B-L-U-E apron, like A-P-R-O-N. .com/anatomy. Like
three free meals and free shit. It really doesn't get better than that. I don't know why you wouldn't do it.
No.
Cool. That's sounds right. Great.
All right.
So one thing you were just talking about, Phil, just these the complex dealing mechanisms, you know, Albania to the U.S., whatever. So I'm thinking of The Big Short again. It sounds like there's a lot of kind of complex. Do you feel like these concepts were difficult to understand? Like, I feel like sometimes I see these financially complex movies and I'm a little confused.
It wasn't about finance and they didn't overdo it.
Yeah.
It was as simple as like, okay, you know, Americans can't do business with the Chinese, mm-hmm. military-wise.
Okay.
And it makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, you're not talking about CDOs, FFs, like whatever the hell, The Big Short.
A Jenga tower. So there are a lot of exotic locations, it sounds like, in this movie. In terms of the story, where are these characters visiting?
I mean, it's they're exotic, but, you know, unlike Fast and the Furious, you're not going to Dubai.
Yeah.
You're going to literally, like, third world countries. Oh, wow. And in some ways, I don't know. I can't say this for everybody, but, you know, I kind of look to it for me is... you know, in many ways, like, we don't necessarily want to consider the actual realities of war. But let's say, like, if you are even pro-war, I'm sure you don't really think about where the ammunition comes from. Mm. And if you knew the truth, like, I don't know. There's a certain element where you're like, okay, well, I'm not willing to do it. So if I'm not willing to do it, can I really be 100% upset with two guys in their 20s that were willing to go through Fallujah and to be in Albania for months in the bitter cold in, like, Shitsville, Albania, mm-hmm. in order to make money.
There is kind of a sense of admiration. Like, you know what? They've got balls to do that, all that stuff, you know?
And again, it's convenient because when, you know, they earn their chops in the movie, and it's in the trailer too when they deliver kind of their first real shipment, their big shipment, and they go through the Triangle of Death, and they find out that they've been through the chain. They're like, yeah, what's up? We go through all triangles, including your mom's.
They're like frat guys who are like risking their lives and getting off on it.
Yeah,
interesting. Gosh, you know. I do want to see this movie. And anything else in terms of story production, specifically about the movie that you want to talk about, performances?
The ending's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for those of you who've seen the movie, slight spoiler, it's that moment when Bradley Cooper's character, you know, here's Miles Teller, and it's the moment between where he's retaining a little bit of his innocence, but he knows how messed up the world that he's actually entered into without even knowing. Mm. And he's asking all these questions. And Bradley Cooper just flips open that briefcase full of money. And he said, hey, this is all the money that you would be getting. Now no more questions.
Wow.
And that was it. And you're like, and it makes, because the questions that he's asking are so directed, so poignant. And you're like, wow, if he's asking these questions and Bradley Cooper is telling him no more, you start to wonder, like, holy shit, how deep does this rabbit hole go? How many people actually got killed? Like, how many deplorable things happened in order to make this happen?
This will be my last Big Short reference, I promise. There's that moment when Finn Wittstock's character and the other kid are so excited because they realize they're going to make millions off of this moment. And Brad Pitt's character is like, you can celebrate, but don't fucking dance. And it's like that serious. Do you feel like this was kind of a similar moment tonally?
Of like the not quite. Different. Different. You know? It just, I think it makes you, it makes you think a little bit different because in that regard, unlike with the Big Short, you know, you as an audience member, you're not in that position. You didn't short the market. Whereas this, you start to think, and even though you didn't participate in, you know, selling of ammunition and whatnot, it's much more like, wow, this is something that I've been blind to.
Wow. You're not, no one is civically engaged.
Yeah.
If you're in the audience, you're guilty of knowing as little as these characters, even though you might be able to be a good citizen to figure some of this stuff out.
Yeah, I mean, the movie basically says, like, anyone who believes that war isn't for profit is either in it and lying to you or a freaking idiot.
Wow. Yeah, so it sounds like this movie has a moralistic component, more than a typical Todd Phillips movie, probably.
Probably.
Interesting. Well,
certainly much more than Due Date.
Yeah. Well, Phil, I think you've convinced me. I think I got to see this movie now.
I think it's, you know,
speaking of seeing this movie, how is it doing?
It hasn't done so well, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, it's got mixed reviews, 59% on Rotten Tomatoes, which isn't terrible. Mm-hmm. I know it doesn't make it certified fresh because it's the 60 threshold that makes it certified fresh.
Those producers must be bummed that one more review would have given them that beautiful tomato, but.
But, you know, I think the only thing that hurts it is really the voiceover.
Really?
I really do. I mean, CinemaScore is a B. And perhaps people, you know, because it is a Todd Phillips movie, and the way that that they kind of build it, it was supposed to be more of a comedy than it perhaps was. It does have amazing comedic elements. Mm-hmm. Like, one of the guys is like, hey, what does AEI stand for? I don't know. It's just fucking made up. It sounds professional. What the fuck does IBM stand for? And then he actually, International Business Machines. Get the fuck out. Get the fuck out. Who the fuck are you? You know, and so it has its comedic moments and whatnot. But I think perhaps people were expecting it to be a little bit more funnier than it is.
Yeah.
And I think you have to, and it's not the reality that people perhaps wanted to see. You know, maybe they wanted like a comedic sugar-coated, spoon-fed type of version of this. And it's like, well, no, it's actually pretty harsh, and you should open your eyes to this crap.
Interesting.
And, you know, that was still existent. Now, guess what? It might be still existent today, or perhaps even worse.
Yeah. So that makes sense. I think movies like this can be tough to market because you want to draw in a comedy crowd, but like I think these kind of genre ambiguous movies where there's a lot of crossover, I think sometimes, how do you sell it in a 30-second trailer? How do you sell it in a poster? I think of another, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot was another one that was a funny movie with serious lessons to be learned, I guess. And I think audiences sometimes have trouble with that because they go in with expectations and they're not always met. Wolf of Wall Street was a huge example of that. Like, I think my parents were like, oh great, a Scorsese, Leonardo DiCaprio movie. Like, oh my gosh, why am I watching Jonah Hill masturbate on Quaaludes? Like, you know what I mean?
Well, that movie was successful.
But it was very successful, but wasn't the reception kind of from audiences kind of mixed?
I forget. But
for some reason, I remember. I think like there, it got like.
Well, I think
a
that's because it was also a 3-hour movie.
It was really long, and I think like, I don't know. I haven't seen it, so I can't necessarily speak to that. But that's interesting.
You haven't seen Wolf of Wall Street?
No, sorry, yeah. I haven't seen War Dogs, so I can't speak to if it was the same effect.
Also, I mean, you know, they chose to go a very Scarface type of marketing. Like, I mean, the poster itself is modeled after Scarface. Now, you know, Jonah Hill's character, Ephraim is influenced by that movie Scarface.
Hmm.
So it makes sense. But, you know, I mean, was it the right way to market? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know.
What's the box office say?
The box office, we were expected to make between 12 and 15 million opening. You know, as of now, worldwide, it's made 24 million. Opening weekend, it made 14.3. So it kind of went into that mark overall. You know, the budget for it, let's see, the budget, $40 million budget, so it's not the biggest budget in the world, so I think it can make its money back overall. And yeah, I think it's just, much like what it broke it down for David and Ephraim was the small thing of not paying the shipment guy. I think it was the small thing of just too much voiceover.
Yeah.
That was the make or break of this movie.
So there must have been a lot of voiceover.
I mean, it's from start to finish.
Yeah. It sounds like, it's interesting because that sounds like it was the thing that didn't make the movie an A+ for you. And you think like that's, in terms of a production decision, that isn't a, I guess if you feel like the story relied on the voiceover, the problem might have been in the script a little bit.
Although, I mean, but here's the interesting part. Like, I thought they had enough techniques I don't think you needed it.
Yeah.
You know, because part of it, I think they just compressed a couple of things too much that you didn't need to. Like, you shave off a couple of minutes elsewhere, you know, because, you know, you could tie it. And for example, his background, David's background is a massage therapist. And, you know, you kind of needed to explain that. But Ephraim does a decent enough job multiple times throughout the movie. Like, when he does have a staff meeting, yes, this is a little bit later, he's like, hey, I literally took this guy. He was jerking off guys for money, and I made him a millionaire. He's like, that's not quite true. But at least, like, okay, like, that's all I need to know. Like, seeing him do massage therapy, like, you know, I don't need it in voiceover form. Like, I can get it visually.
You can see it. That makes sense.
And by the way, it is the actress who played it is she's also in Hands of Stone, which just recently came out. I look forward to seeing her more of her. Not only is she beautiful, but she's I think she's going to do really well. Ana de Armas.
Ana de Armas.
She was born in Cuba.
Cool.
Awesome. So,
I feel like it's time for us to have like a beautiful Latin American actress surge to the forefront because I feel like I think
thought you were selling pillows.
I think of a lot of our greats like Penelope Cruz and who else? There's so many.
Who was in Sausage Party? Not plenty. Zach.
Salma Hayek.
Salma Hayek. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of too. I feel like it's time for us to have another star, another A-list star who's a little younger, maybe.
Yeah.
Search to the forefront. So.
Well, she's only 28.
Very cool. Looking forward to that.
All righty. Well, I think that does it for us. Here, let us know what you guys thought of this format.
Got one more question, if that's okay for you, Phil.
Sure.
And we're talking about legacy of the movie. I think all three of these actors, Bradley, Miles, and Jonah, are at least Oscar nominated, right?
Mm-hmm.
So do we think we're going to see any kind of award, any kind of gold for them around the corner come 2017?
Not from this movie.
Not for this movie? All right.
Not for this movie. Let's
Fair
be
enough.
Honest.
Yeah, I guess it's not really an Oscar-type movie, but I thought
It's got a 59 on Rotten Tomatoes. It's got to be on CinemaScore. Not for this movie.
Fair enough.
And it came out in August.
Yeah.
Not for this movie.
Cool.
So there you have it. Let us know what you guys thought of the format. Maybe in the future, if there's ever certain movies where there's people that want to come talk about it, but not enough of us have seen it here specifically, then we could kind of do this format again. And also, let me know specifically what you guys thought about the movie. I'll be happy to chat with you guys about it. Obviously, I've seen it. Overall, enjoy it. So, want to hear your guys' opinions if you have any differing thoughts. And did you guys find things shocking? Did you guys empathize with them at any moment, despite their deplorable actions? Anyway, coming up, we've got Don't Breathe. We just recently did stuff. We've done
Kubo.
We've done Wolf of Wall Street. Kubo is completely different than this. We've done 22 Jump Street. We've covered a lot of Bradley Cooper movies. A lot of Jonah Hill. We've covered a lot of Miles Teller movies recently. Fantastic Four, which wasn't the best, but we did cover that. Spectacular Now, I think we did cover.
And Whiplash, of course.
Whiplash, of course, yes. So plenty to go through in the archives section if you're itching for more content. As always, check out more content here at Popcorn Talk Network. Zach, who is in the booth, special shout out to him. A newer show, Sci-Fi Weekly.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a fan of sci-fi, definitely check that out as well. We'll be seeing you guys next time.
Peace out.
producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.